south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. You know, not long ago, I was talking about how when you finally learn enough Spanish that you can follow a TV program or a news broadcast, then you feel like you're really getting somewhere. You get this amazing lift. By the way, you can always follow the newscasters first because, like in the States, they have your middle-of-the-road accent, kind of like the equivalent of an American Nebraska accent like Johnny Carson had. So there will come a time when you're down here long enough that you'll actually start understanding the newscasters and you'll think, man, I got this thing down. This is cool. I can understand and speak Spanish. Well, maybe just understand it. Now I can play the seemingly clueless gringo act and actually know what they're saying behind my back or in front of it, too. That is, until you listen to your cleaning lady talking to one of her friends or her kids, then once again, your confidence is squashed. Then you're surely thinking, am I going into reverse or what? No, well, it's just because the average Latin person on the street, like the average gringo up in the States, does not speak in nice, well-enunciated, evenly spaced word bites. So in the Spanish learning and communication process, it will be two steps forward and one step back, sometimes two steps back. And for whatever highs, even lows that you get when you realize you can actually start communicating with the Latins, most all gringos who get to that point will agree there are two or three disappointing things about that supposedly enlightened process. Your first disappointment will be when you finally start understanding some of the words to the Spanish songs. Now, how can I put this nicely? Well, they're dumb, stupid, redundant, and idiotic at best. Worse yet, since reggaeton music, if you want to call it music, is the favorite of the under 30 and adolescent crowd, well, when you first start realizing what those words and themes are all about, soon enough you realize they copied all the worst misogynist, sexist, vulgar crap that rap and hip-hop in the States have been specializing in for a couple of decades now. Which is why when you start understanding what they're actually saying in reggaeton music, you have to wonder, why in hell do the Latin women put up with this crap? Well, why do women up in the States put up with rap and hip-hop? I mean, come on. No matter what negative lip service so-called enlightened American women give to it, rap crap bling and hip-hop garbage still dominate the Grammys every year, don't they? At least down here they have an excuse. It's a macho society to the core. Then, of course, there's the more pop Latin music, nothing more than reheated bits and pieces they copied from first world U.S. hits, combined with a typical Latin dance beat. Nothing wrong with that if you like to dance. But as far as any of these Latin songs, bands, or artists trying to convey an actual message, other than love, sex, drugs, rock and roll, bling, and well, money for nothing, forget about it. God, I can't believe how much I sound like my dad. So there's Latin pop and Latin rock, which to us is tropical, airy, and pleasant at first, but after a while, because it's just so repetitive, it does get on your nerves. But thankfully, like music, you can tune it out. But then there's reggaeton, which is nothing more than a bad, bad, droning copy of tasteless and talentless U.S. rap and hip-hop. Like U.S. rap and hip-hop, it probes deeply into all the philosophical and existential themes. Money, guns, sex, hoes, guns, booty, and bling. Only Latin style. Now, some might say, ah, Johnny, lay off. So what rap, hip-hop, and reggaeton have no socially valuable or redeeming qualities? Since when did the pulp media culture or the average common mind give a rat's ass about that? So then if I had the power, would I pull the plug? No, because I don't believe in censorship. However, if I was a parent, I certainly wouldn't let my kids download or listen to that crap. The point is, when you start learning your Spanish well enough to understand what they're saying in the music, you'll have a definite moment of sadness when you realize the days of the happy, fun-loving Macarena rhythms are over. Face it, La Bamba, La Cucaracha, Oye Como Va, they're just not writing them like that anymore. By the way, I had this very same conversation with a smart, little, precocious, 14-year-old half-Latin, half-gringo kid. His dad's a gringo friend of mine who's doing quite well down here, and he sends his kid to an expensive private helicopter school. Anyway, not so long ago, we were sitting around having this discussion, the theme being the dumbing down of education, pop culture, and modern music. Anyway, this smart little half-Latin, half-gringo kid disagreed with me, said I was wrong, and then I said, prove it. And by the look in his eyes, I could tell the wheels were turning. All right, so that was that. Then, just a week or two later, he actually phoned me up and said, hey, Johnny, you have to listen to this song. So, unbeknownst to me, I forgot about the whole incident. This smart little kid, Alex, took what I had said to heart and searched through his archives and came up with a song that had a positive, special message. And lordy, lordy, it actually had words that rhymed. And a couple of those words, just a couple, had more than two syllables. Nope, it wasn't about money, guns, sex, hoes, cars, booty, or bling. So my hat's off to Alex, who found one of the exceptions to the rule. By the way, most gringos and expats who finally master enough Spanish to be able to understand what's going on, they're always in for a big disappointment. And I mean always, when they go to a movie and it's been translated into Spanish. I'm talking about a big first world production Hollywood movie that was filmed in English. And not just because the translations are bad. Though they've been getting a lot better. In the past, they were absolutely terrible. However, I've noticed after watching quite a few of these things myself, there is a subtle trick in trying to fit the Spanish phrases and words in while the English speaker, usually American, moves his or her lips. Luckily, in both English and Spanish, there are a lot of different ways to say the exact same thing. So the person doing the translation to Spanish in the studio can make it work out. But you've got two problems there. One is you're not hearing the real actor's voice, and that's part of the artistry and training of a good or even great actor. That's how they got to be popular enough to get on the screen in the first place, because they have their own visual and vocal styles. So by wiping out their original audio expressions and inflections and having some person in a studio thousands of miles away do a voiceover in Spanish, original actors will admit a good part of the performance they worked so hard to achieve was lost in translation. For example, if you're watching a movie with George Clooney, you're not going to hear his real voice. You're going to hear somebody else's voice. So if you're used to hearing his real voice, the new voice will throw you or at least grate on you. So instead, you've got this other guy speaking in Spanish, superimposing his vocal ideas and inflection over Clooney's. You get the idea, and that's why you'll never fully enjoy watching a first world movie with actors you're familiar with when dubbed into Spanish. For me, and so many other expat gringos who speak pretty good Spanish, it's never more than a somewhat hollow experience. And as for me, I can't tell you how over the years, so many times I've been dragged to the movies. They have big cinema houses here, and they're always playing first-run American and European movies. And if you're with any Latinos or native Spanish speakers, by far they prefer to see the dubbed version. And of course, we always prefer the original version in English, which will always have Spanish subtitles, but we don't care about that. In fact, if you know your Spanish, it's a way to figure out how badly they've done the translation. Now, oftentimes, when they have a really popular movie, let's say Guardians of the Galaxy, or Girl on a Train, or let's say 50 Shades of Grey, which I thought was complete crap, nevertheless, when it's a big popular movie like that, it'll generally come to the big cinemas in Latin America in two versions. The original version in English with Spanish subtitles, and on another screen in the same theater, a dubbed in Spanish version, which is how all the locals want to see it, of course. Now, I have to admit, this is pretty much a very recent thing. Only 5 or 10 years ago, all the big international movies that came out of the States and Europe, etc., came here to Latin America with subtitles. In other words, they weren't dubbed in Spanish. And because Latins love anything first world gringo, they flock to see them. That's why they have no qualms about seeing something with subtitles. And of course, if it's dubbed in Spanish, that's infinitely better. However, like I said, that's only a recent phenomenon. But there's more. Something else has happened in the last 5 or 6 years concerning Latin cinema. All those older, big box office movies that were once just subtitled are now being translated into Spanish. So, all of a sudden, there's a barrage of dubbed first world movies hitting all the TV stations day and night. Most all of them were popular 5, 10, or 15 years ago up in the States, and when they ran down here at the big cinemas, they came in English with Spanish subtitles, but now that's all changing. All right, here's an example. The other day, I was standing in line in the office of a big insurance company, car insurance company. renewing my liability coverage, which, by the way, costs me a cool $150 a year, including what you would call full AAA coverage, too. Anyway, when I finally got to the waiting room where they had chairs, there's a big TV screen there, and guess what was playing? One of the favorite narco movies of all time with Al Pacino, Scarface. How could you forget that one, right? Well, now, the funny thing is, last time I saw that flick, must have been 10 or 15 years ago, who knows, it was on TV down here in Latin America with subtitles, of course. But the one I was seeing in the insurance office, same movie, was dubbed in Spanish. And by the way, Al Pacino's voice in Spanish was rather wimpy. Not a very convincing narco kingpin voice to me, anyway. So that's what's happening these days. All the older big hit movies that we all remember from our childhood and such are coming down here to Latin America dubbed, not subtitled. By the way, it always makes me laugh how these translators and the people who do the subtitles name these movies, because it almost never comes out exactly right in translation. For example, Scarface, what do you think they call it in Spanish? It's called Corta Cara, which means, literally translated in English, cut face. Now, for those of you who know even just a little bit of Spanish, you might remember the word scar is called cicatriz in Spanish. Cicatriz, that means scar. So why didn't they just say cara cicatriz? I don't know. That's the perfect translation, Scarface. But no, it has to be corta cara, cut face. Hey, I quit trying to figure out Latin logic a long time ago. Oh, and if you think that's just an oddball example, the other day I was at somebody's house and lo and behold, you know what was on TV? The movie, well, I won't tell you what it is in English. I'll let you guess by the Spanish title. Now, the Spanish title is Naranja Mecánica. Mecánica is mechanical. That's easy enough. Naranja, orange. Otherwise known to Stanley Kubrick and the world as A Clockwork Orange. In Spanish, Naranja Mecánica. The mechanical orange. Go figure, huh? So why didn't they call it something like maybe El Mecanismo Naranja Reloj? The orange mechanical clock, maybe? The point being, last time I saw that film must have been 20, 25 years ago. It had Spanish subtitles, and the other day, when it was on local Latin TV, it was dubbed in Spanish, no subtitles. So, it looks like some busy bees are at work in Mexico, dubbing old first world movies into Spanish by the ton. And it seems just a couple of studios in Mexico have the contract to do all the dubbing. And how do I know that? Because if you wait till the very end of the credits on each movie, it always says what studio did the dubbing. So, it's a sure thing that soon enough, all first world movies will arrive here in Latin America, already dubbed in Spanish with no subtitles. Which brings us full circle back to the beginning of the show where I mentioned, if you ever end up at the cinema with your Latin friends. By the way, the theaters themselves are not bad at all. In fact, they've got 3D, and in the larger cities, even IMAX. However, be prepared to be mildly or even more than mildly disappointed when you're hoping to see a popular first world blockbuster on the screen, only to find it's been dubbed in Spanish, and badly translated at that. Now, one of my gringo buddies, at the urging of his Latin wife, constantly, almost every weekend, gets pulled into the cinema. He said for a long time it was quite a chore, and he just did it, you know, to keep peace in the family. Besides, down here, it's only around $5 or less a hit. Well, wouldn't you know it, he's kind of an IT guy, and he came up with a rather interesting solution. And now he doesn't mind at all going to the movies with his wife. By the way, when you go to the big cinema houses here, where they've got 6, 8, 10, 12 screens, you'll find 9 out of 10 of those screens are running first world, usually Hollywood movies. And maybe just 1 out of those 10 screens running a movie that was made and produced in a Latin country. You know, of course, Latin America has its own B and C grade copies of the Hollywood studios, just as India has its ridiculous Bollywood, which actually puts out more movies and makes more money than Hollywood, if you can believe that. Now, normally, the movies that come out of Latin production companies using Latin actors are laughable and amateurish and basically crap. But let's not forget that 9 out of 10 Hollywood pictures are crap, too. Now, occasionally, like 1 out of 100 times, a Latin production company will put out a pretty decent movie. Even then, that movie will almost never make it to U.S. screens. You know how Americans just can't sit still for subtitles or dubbed movies, much less black and white pictures. Except, of course, for that 1 or 2% of Americans that go in for art house flicks. In fact, I went through that phase myself when I was at university. And here's what I learned. Nope, I can't stand subtitles either. Now, the whole thing's kind of funny because, like I said, 9 out of 10 screens here in Latin America are running first world, usually Hollywood movies, dubbed. At least that's been the case recently. Whereas when you watch Latin TV, and they've got, you know, a couple hundred channels like you do up in the States, they're always running corny and hokey films produced and filmed in Latin America. They're all over the TV channels, but never hit the big cinemas. And believe me, 99% of them are laughable pieces of crap. But all the Latin viewing public, they know these movies and these stars and all the stupid plot lines. And these bad actors and actresses show up over and over again in these movies. So they've become these household name superstars in Latin America, but nowhere else. By the way, one thing I've learned, when you're in someone's house and they have one of these stupid movies playing, a long time ago I learned not to laugh at, discredit, or disparage those movies. Or say things like, come on, do we have to watch this piece of mierda? Yes, I learned you don't want to be insensitive, not when you're sitting in someone else's house. In fact, I remember years ago I was at a family house and they were watching a very bad Canton Floss movie. You probably don't know that guy, but he was a Latin comic icon, kind of a Latin Jerry Lewis with much less talent, if that's possible. Then I think I must have had a migraine because I said in Spanish, do we have to watch this? Well, everyone shut up for a second. And you know, I got the kind of a look from the lady of the house was as if I just called the Pope a child molester. Wait a minute. I think that Pope was one. Oh, well. Remember, we're talking about a society here who've set the entertainment bar very low. I mean, look, they'll fork out a week's wages, even more, to see the likes of Air Supply, Kenny G, and Lionel Richie when on a Latin tour. And the average gringo wouldn't pay any one of those guys $5 to rake his lawn. Now, it might sound like I'm being way too harsh here. Maybe I am. But you see, the upside is that in general, Latin people are so easy to please. And even though they have less and have a much tougher life making ends meet, they're certainly much happier and more content than we are. And really, if you think I'm being too harsh, you know who's coming through Latin America on tour, and I'm sure he's going to sell out? Barry Manilow. In Chicago, we used to call him Barely Manly. Oh man, you take the good with the bad, huh? So Latin America has its own bad copies of Hollywood production and film studios. Most movies, TV shows, and soap operas they grind out of that machine become immensely popular here. And what's mega hot right now? A brand new development called the Narco Telenovela. You guessed it, they're all about the glam and the hype of the narco world. Yep, every episode is chock full of planes, helicopters, bodyguards, beautiful and handsome, gun-toting girls and guys, not to mention endless suitcases full of cash and drugs. Yep, it's the Latin version of lifestyles of the rich and famous who just happen to be narcos. So it's the fantasy of what the common, uneducated guy or gal can have by breaking the law that makes these shows so very popular. That said, listen to this article that just came out from one of the biggest newspapers in all Latin America. It says, Mexican officials are dedicated to cracking down on TV shows that glamorize drug cartels. Starting with the most popular telenovela or soap opera of all time that's running right now called El Señor de los Cielos. It says here the Mexican Secretary of Interior claims this particular telenovela series is an unapologetic portrayal of drug dealers and drug running. And unfortunately, he says it just happens to be the most popular telenovela, that soap opera, that the network Telemundo has ever produced. He says Mexican officials will be taking action against these narco series, since such programs do not depict drug violence and drug activities in a negative way. Instead, they glorify the practice, violating the provisions of Mexico's federal telecommunication and broadcasting law, claiming that these narco series have a real and permanent effect of the wrong kind on viewers, especially young viewers. Then, in an op-ed piece on this same hot topic, it says, the growing backlash against Mexican soap operas revolving around the drug trade and its principal players, known as narco telenovelas, is based largely on their perceived harm to the country's social fabric. Then the article goes on to say, let's talk about the two most famous narco telenovelas that are running right now on TV. It says, according to Miguel Cabañas, associate professor at, get this, Michigan State University in the U.S., who studies popular cultural representation of drug trafficking in Latin America. Hey, wouldn't you like to have had that grant? I'm sure you're paying for it. Anyway, he says the problem is these are not just television programs about the narco culture. It's a means of drawing attention away from the real problems of Latins, mostly in Mexico, where the stories are based. And he says when young people view it on television and see the high style of luxury the drug culture affords, they don't leave their impressions in the TV room. They bring it with them to the streets. Then he says, these shows do not offer a satisfying explanation as to what's really happening with Mexico's organized crime dynamic and offers no solutions. However, he says, in that sense, these narco telenovelas are a means of widening and satisfying the population's need to understand what's going on around them, however, in a false and glorified sense, as depicted by television screenwriters. Most of these shows, he says, do not have an implicit criticism of that narco lifestyle. And then he talks about the two most famous of these telenovelas. By the way, I've seen a few of these episodes. The first one, as mentioned before, El Señor de los Cielos. He says this Telemundo production enjoys a huge popularity, not only in Mexico, but among all Hispanic audiences in general. The series tells a story of a fictional leader of the Juarez cartel who died while undergoing plastic surgery in one of the episodes. However, as these things go, he didn't really die, and instead, he expands his international drug market, combines with Colombian cartels, does sneaky deals with the U.S. DEA, pays off politicians, has a number of affairs with beautiful women, has a serious illness, loses some loved ones, always finds a way to overcome obstacles, and returns stronger than ever. In fact, it says, in the last season, he has so much influence that he can appoint ministers and senators, even presidential appointees. And his character's lifestyle is just chock full of luxury, love affairs, and power. However, he says, it does show that the Mexican government is very corrupt, easily bribed and paid off, how they are part of the broader criminal dynamic, and how they allow the drug trade to persist, even grow, as they enrich themselves. Which is kind of a well-deserved black eye for Mexico's corrupt government, and it's suspected that it's one of the reasons the government's so adamant at going after these telenovela producers right now. The second most popular narco telenovela is called La Reina del Sur, translation, Queen of the South. This soap opera tells the story of Teresa Mendoza, a poor, beautiful woman from the narco state of Sinaloa, Mexico, who grew up abused, mistreated, and surrounded by drug crime. And the series starts out with the murder of her drug trafficker boyfriend, who in the end turns out to be an undercover police officer, who is also corrupt, but yet connected with the U.S. DEA. She escapes, changes her identity, and starts dealing with smugglers and even the Russian mafia. She too goes through difficult situations. Sometimes she has money, sometimes she's broke. She loses loved ones to bullets, is abused, mistreated, and then ends up at the top of the heap again, making this drug trafficking narco telenovela look not only acceptable, but glamorous to the populace. Though it does show the hard and difficult life of people involved in drug trafficking, and although it does not deal with real cases, La Reina del Sur, the Queen of the South, is a reflection of the narco reality in Mexico, showing that anyone, through certain circumstances, can get involved in the drug business, make a killing, or get killed. However, it says, as far as the public's concerned, most of its deeper messages can and do get lost in the glamour of it. Okay, so that's what's happening in Mexico now. Why? Well, because you see the Spanish TV network Telenovelas broadcasting that thing in all 20 Latin countries, and those shows are firmly cementing a negative image of Mexico, like it didn't have one before, in the minds and hearts of people in all other Latin countries. So it's turning out to be very bad PR for the Mexican government and Mexico in general. So how are they going to handle that one? Well, probably by doing nothing, because Latin governments generally do nothing. As for me, I believe in zero censorship anyway, so hey, bring it on. Let it roll. By the way, like I said, I've seen a few snippets of those narco telenovelas, and you know, even the name is kind of funny. Now, up in the States, soap operas are long-running daytime series, right? In Latin America, they've got whole channels, even networks, solely devoted to soap operas or telenovelas. And they run 24/7, day and night. So even if you don't watch TV, it's nearly impossible to avoid those things. When you walk into most Latins' homes, there's a TV on, just like up in the States, and it's usually sports if there are males at home and telenovelas when the females are around. They're on in the waiting room in the bank, the doctor's offices, car shops, government buildings, everywhere. The funny thing is, they're calling them narco telenovelas or narco soap operas. Imagine if up in the States, they had similar shows and called them narco soap operas. You think maybe that would become a fad? Who knows? Anyway, today I just thought you might like a little armchair Latin sociology lesson. After all, this show's called The Expat Files Living in Latin America, and believe me, if you're living in Latin America, you just might want to be aware of the things that are going around with the general public. I mean, just the fact that if you go out to dinner at 7 or 8 o'clock at night, narco telenovelas will be blasting from the TV screen above the bar, and it's on in millions of kitchens and living rooms, too, and everyone's rooting for the bad guy. So how do all those millions of TV watchers process that? But I digress. In fact, I digress so much I forgot to tell you what happened to my friend who's married to a Latina that drags him to the movies every weekend. Well, he said for the last few months he's been going to a pirate movie site, downloading the movie that his wife's about to drag him to see at the big cinema. He's got his earbuds in. He's got a pirated version in English of that very same movie. So as he watches the action on the big screen, he's listening to the soundtrack as it was originally recorded and the voices of the real actors in English as it was meant to be. Yep, so now he doesn't resist or put up a fuss when his wife says, "Let's go to the movies." All right, we're getting to the end of the show now. I'd like to remind you once again, if you want to get on my early bird waiting list for my July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar being held in and around Guatemala, Central America again, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll put you on my mailing list. And again, for those of you who are procrastinating with your plan B, just can't seem to get it off the ground or get it well organized, you really owe it to yourself to go to expatplanb.com and sign up for my Expat Essentials course. And you know, since everyone's lifestyle and personal history is different, when you do check out my Expat Essentials course, you'll see how to line up your own ducks with your own particular set of circumstances, and that's what having a plan B is all about. That's expatplanb.com.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.